Tell Uncle Bubba, I am somebody. I am somebody. I may be unemployed, but I am somebody. I may be unskilled, but I am somebody. I may be uneducated, but I am somebody. I may be in jail, but I am somebody. I am God's child. Soul power. Black power. Next week, because I'm not going to go into all this preaching this morning, I want you to think about what I said, because I want you to leave here and just leave here thinking about who is Manny. You know, who is holding me back? I was talking to one of my friends on the West Coast, and he was telling me about Dr. Abernathy ain't doing it. And so I said, now, what is he stopping you from organizing? Were you trying to talk with somebody about liberation and he broke in and stopped you from talking? Well, you know, wonder what Reverend Jesse doing. See, ain't no telling what he gonna be doing. You're your own savior. You got to stand up. Wherever you are, freedom can be interpreted from up here, but it must come from down there. It must come from the bottom up. Pseudo-historians, those instant historians just be taking everything out of context. So, well, now the problem is, you see, the black woman, see, and she just kind of dominates us, you see, and all that. No, that ain't the problem, because when the man would have abused both of us, when he would have tried to destroy both of us, the outstanding beauty of the black woman, in spite of being unable to embellish herself, her beauty shined so radiantly in spite of that. It was her appeal to him that softened up his heart enough to at least employ her while she sustained us. On the other hand, the black man is not the problem. He was unemployed not because he was lazy. Not because he didn't want the satisfaction of standing up. But the white man had to find his manhood in the negation of another man. He had to prove himself to be a man by saying we were not men. His own psychic need forced him to embarrass us and then to double the humiliation by putting our woman on top of us and then locking his woman away from us. Is of such. That's why either you love everybody or you don't love anybody. Because you can't determine who you love and you can't determine how much you love them. And you cannot always come up with the reasons as to why you love them. Love has a way of taking over if it's allowed to grow at all. So you might fall in love with anybody. The tragedy is, do they love you? Is your problem. See, I don't consider it. I don't consider it a part of the revolution to run around downing somebody because they married a white lady, because they married a white man. Often I did not see it as politically feasible for our people, given our ethnic battle, but I know that love has a way of being its own self that what it cares about the sociology of 1969 is nothing. I repeat, that what love itself cares about the sociology of 1969 is nothing. So what happens with the slave master as he begins to hate and destroy? Hate is just as pervasive as love. Once you start that, you can't stop either. You start hating your neighbor, and you start hating your other neighbor, and you start hating yourself, and you begin being a hater. In everything you see, you rationalize a method and a reason for hating them, because you project yourself onto them. So the white man begins to hate the black man because he threatens his being. He has to hate the black woman for economic reasons, because she is a part of the caste that he needs for his profit. And then he has to lock his own woman, who he would cherish, away from their humanity, and has to force her to act as if they are not human, in order for her to be able to feel that, is to deaden the nerves within our own being. For a white woman not to be excited by the body build of a Jim Brown is to have developed so many deadening nerves within our own being. I'm serious as I can be. I want y'all to hear what I'm saying now. For a woman to walk down the beach and see a Jim Brown and have the capacity, Jim Brown ain't got no problem. She got the problem. So it was built into the structure. A white woman, or to please a white man, had to subjugate her humanity. Had to walk by crying babies, hungry, with food in her cup, and then not bother her conscience, mean that she had spiritually killed herself. One learns how the universe ought to function when he watches oceans and rivers and creeks. Rivers are not jealous of oceans because they are bigger. And oceans don't try to dominate rivers and creeks because they are smaller. Because somehow they sense that all are part of all water. And so they just exist. One writer said that the night never questions the stars when they appear. They just exist. I hope y'all understand what I'm saying. You got to know the nature of who we're fighting to get liberation. Know your enemy. Say, for a white woman to be able to walk by a hungry black baby with food in her cup but not feed it is to then develop the capacity to go and play bridge while somebody else raises her child. Oh, some of y'all gonna see where the hippies come from in a minute. You're gonna see why the kids are saying, yeah, I got a kitchen full of food, and I got a house full of furniture, and I got a sports car, and I don't love my mom and daddy. You're going to find out where it comes from. The slavery that the whites imposed upon us has now reverberated, and they're captured by their own tyranny. Y'all think about it. For those that would be tempted to hate, who would be tempted to cut yourself off from loving, who would be tempted to not cry when you see sad situations. Don't cut off your humanity. And so now you find yourself wondering why white people are starving in Illinois. Wonder why black people are starving in Illinois. Wonder why can we find there are more white folks starving than black folk, and white men won't stand up for their own people. Wonder why white women won't speak up for their own sister's child that's starving. Wonder why the white man can dismiss his own brother and his own mother. He can find a rationale for black folk being suppressed. Because of the historical estrangement, he can say that we're less than human, that we're lazy. What can he say about his mother? He puts an old folk home. What can he say about his brother who grew up with him? What can he say about his sister? And in the final analysis, he becomes the most perverted of all. Because the black man that he abused resents him. The black woman that he misused will relate to him for expediency, but will exploit him, and he cannot trust her, but also ask God to forgive her for having to do it, because God knows her heart. It's where her husband and children are. And so he cannot find fulfillment there. And he can't find fulfillment with his wife because he's dehumanized her and has made her frigid and cold and inhuman. And then when men cannot relate to other men as men, and men cannot relate to women, they only have two alternatives left. That is either to relate to themselves or to other men. Listen. Ain't nothing left but to relate to himself. Another man. And try to get the gratification out of money that he should get out of other humans. And that runs you right back into Jesus' position. Man can't live by bread alone. Try it, but you can't live by bread alone. Know who your enemy is.
No. Thank you, brother.
Who is it that has made our men frightened? Has made our women schizophrenic? Has made the white woman inhuman? Know your enemy.
No.
Who is it that is conducting wars all around the world? Know your enemy. Who made the decision that missiles were more important than men? Know your enemy. Who declared war on Vietnam and killed your son and threatened your husband? Know who your enemy is. You don't want to fight him? Admit it. If you're afraid he's going to kill you, you don't want to die. But don't go around the hard workers and laborers in the black community, calling them toms and calling them counter-revolutionaries and dismissing them as bourgeois because you don't want to fight the enemy. Don't want to confront daily, admit it. Don't talk about Bill Barry as your problem. Now, we generally have three reactions. One reaction is to drown yourself in cynicism, Calvin, and give up and say you can't beat the man. So you just go on and do your personal thing and just hope that you live to be a ripe old age. Just kind of dismiss yourself. That's one reaction to it. Another reaction is to be able to, with your fear, fight your brother. The other is to say that the man is so sick that we don't want to be bothered with him. Now let me tell you something about reality. It does not spare fantasy. It will endure it, but it will not spare it. You can say, damn the capital in Washington. So I don't want to be bothered with it. And you can, through religion, pray and run around the capital. Say, I'm not going to deal with it. Say, the Lord's going to take care of me. You can, through apathy and disgust, say, damn the capital. Turn your back. I ain't going to bother. Or you can say, I'm so mean, and the white folks so crooked, we're just going to wait until the clips come. And we ain't going to bother with him. But whether you are cussing, or praying, or pouting, the Capitol is still sitting there distributing goods and services. Whether you lack it or not, if you eat at all in America, you're eating upon the prerogatives of capitalism. Whether you lack it or not, food in America is approved and distributed through the U.S. Department of Agriculture. If there has to be a revolution, it can't be around the Department of Agriculture, it must be on it. Y'all hear me good. Now I say that reality was spare fantasy. That is, while you praying or cussing or using your other method of escape, it will sit there and spare you. Let you cuss on. Just don't break in these doors. Let you and Jesus and the prophets and Yahweh and Allah and Buddha and God, I mean, y'all go on. Just when you set up your thunder and lightning situation, remember, I got some lightning rods and some other methods to stop you and your Lord, too. Y'all hear me? I mean, damn all that old just talking. When you get through talking, reality's still sitting there. Holding the tax money, sending the bars to wall, holding up the food, not breaking down the desegregation lines. When you get through escaping, reality's still sitting there. Whether you're eating and saying your blessing and happy, if you eat some sausage and some eggs and some bread, It was grown, and it was sanctioned through the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Right. Where you walk around cussing with a beard on and eating a piece of sausage and snatching out your mouth, it still came through the U.S. Department of Agriculture. I said, reality sits right here. That's the way to put it, Watson. What is ears? Now, you might want to take the ears and fight it and raise it to the ought. You might want to take what is and take it to what it ought to be. But you got to what it ought to be. But you got to be. But you got to what it ought to be. But you got to... Hey.
Ha, ha, ha.
you'll just be wrestling in fantasy and fooling yourself and looking for lines of least resistance as a way out. Whoever finally takes over Chicago, his office will be on Clark Street. Now you can run around and snatch a few pocketbooks and smack a few people across the head and talk about your turf and a few other things, but whoever finally takes over Chicago will be on Clark Street and will be making decisions from there. Now, it ought to be us. We got enough power to do it. If we get together and we don't destroy ourselves, if we don't destroy ourselves between here and downtown with in-group fighting, but whether we get there or not, the orders will come from Clark Street. Wherever Pharaoh's office is it on Clark Street? Yeah, good. Uh-huh. I went down to Southern Illinois to give a speech about 3 months ago. The brothers were going to protect me, and I appreciate it. Had the gun and stuff. And you know, I think that we have responsibility, as I said last week, to be as nonviolent as we can, and violent as we must be, because we got to live. I ain't got no hang up with that. But here was the problem. You know, I mean, we're violent enough now, you know, to kill cabbages, and kill rabbits, kill chickens. And if it gets hard enough, you know what I mean, we're going into cannibalism and kill each other. Because societies have done that. Because men want to live so bad, they'll eat each other before they'll just stand still and die. Got no hang up with it. But what I did have a hang up with, they didn't know who the enemy was.
That's right.
When they came to protect me, and went on to the girls' dorm, they had a patrol around the dormitory all night. So none of the white fellas would abuse them, the black women, which is a sound proposition. But now, I mind you, wasn't nothing in the dorm but women, you know, black women and white women. But they still, in case some of the white fellas decided they was going to invade that night or something, they was going to protect them. And they had a 9-month, year-round protection plan. But the enemy was that the black women that were sitting up there studying wasn't reading nothing. I mean, the books they was reading would not equip them
That's
to come
right.
home and be able to be productive.
That's right.
Right? The courses they were taking mm-hmm. would not allow them to come home and be productive. They didn't know who the enemy was. Mm-hmm. You cannot protect ignorance with a pistol. Do y'all understand what I'm saying? The enemy was invisible. The enemy was a white idea. The white man that had the ideas already dead. I mean, you can get mad at them like we used to do down home and go out and spit on white people's grave and pull nasty stuff on it. But you know what I mean? At home, that's where we try to get back. We go to the white people. We read the obituary column. And we read the bitch red column and we pretend it was the funny paper. And we just go out and just be laughing, the white folks dead. And then we'd go over to the graveyard and we'd spit on the white folks' grave and throw rocks at the tombstone and pull nasty stuff on the graveyard and all. But you know what I mean? They'd just be talking about, I mean, they didn't move, they just laid there and cool it. And then die limbs, you know what I mean? Look, am I on the case? I mean, I want to know. Am I getting over to you? You ask the average street corner revolutionary right now, say, why the movement ain't moved? Say, well, see old Lawrence Landry and them, they messed around a while, and so on, so on, so on, so on. And then old Al Raven and them, they messed around a while. And then Dr. Kingham came to him marching and silver and song, and that didn't free us. The question is, who was the common enemy of Landry, Raby, and King? Did either of those guys fight against open house? Did either of those guys fight against the hunger campaign? Did either of those guys fight against our being able to register and vote in our own neighborhood year-round? Did either of those guys set up a school system that wouldn't educate our children? Who was your enemy? Know your enemy. What makes it difficult, Calvin, that you cannot always identify him by his color? That's a rather simplistic analysis. You see, we must never forget that it was a black man who infiltrated Marcus Garvey and turned over the file to the white man, or to the enemy. We must never forget. Dr. King was kind enough to sign the black woman's autograph, and she stuck scissors in his chest. Yes. We must never forget that Malcolm was preaching. Black men shot him. Therefore, white-black has its place, but it is not an absolute. Because while James Reed, Michael Swann and Andrew Goodman and others gave their lives, there were some blacks who were saying that our movement was ridiculous.